Judgment upon Amalek and others. Ancient judgments. Theme text. Jehovah said to Moses, I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Jehovah hath sworn, Jehovah will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Exodus chapter 17, verses 14 through 16. Amalekites and Philistines. Amalek, which means dweller in a valley, Smith's Bible Dictionary, was a grandson of Esau by a concubine. See Genesis 36, 10 through 12. His descendants raised flocks and herds in the Sinai Desert. When the Israelite refugees first fled Egypt, Amalekites ambushed them, but were defeated. As a result, Jehovah swore their doom in Exodus 17, verses 8 through 16. The Amalekite power was later broken by King Saul, who then disobeyed God's command and spared their king Agag and the best of Amalekite flocks, 1 Samuel chapter 15. Centuries later, Saul's disobedience hurt the Israelites when Haman the Agagite, likely a descendant from the Amalekite king Agag, tried to get the Persians to destroy all the Jews, as described in the book of Esther. Today, we can no longer identify the Amalekites as a people. The Philistines, or immigrants from Smith's Bible Dictionary, have a different story. They already existed in Abraham's day, Genesis 21, 32 through 34, and Genesis 26, 1. The prophet Amos associated the Philistines with the region of Kaphtor, likely Crete, in Amos 9, verse 7. Jeremiah also refers to the Philistines as the remnant of the country of Kaphtor, Jeremiah 47, verse 4. This agrees with archaeological evidence, which suggests that the Philistines were a sea people. It is likely that more of these sea people arrived in Philistia after the volcanic eruptions on Santorini during the Exodus ended the Minoan civilization on Crete. The immigrant Philistines were a continual threat to Israel during the reigns of both Israel's judges and kings. In later years, Hezekiah broke their power. See 2 Kings 18, verse 8. Few Arabs in that land today, if any, can trace their histories back to the Philistines or the Amalekites. The modern Gaza Strip. The Ottoman, or Turkish Empire, suppressed the 1875 Christian revolt in the Balkan Peninsula, but declared bankruptcy in October 1875. Thus, in 1878, Pasha was reluctantly ready to sell land in Palestine when Britain's Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli urged it in 1878. Jews then purchased land near the Yakin River, and European Jews arrived on November 3, 1878, at what would become Petah Tikva. Malaria depopulated the town shortly thereafter until mosquito abatement could allow them to return. Today, it is the fifth largest city in Israel. Jews then purchased more land along the northern coast, the plain of Esdraelon, and farther north on the near side of the Jordan River, as well as some land near Jerusalem and Beersheba, fleeing East European pogroms. More Jews came to work these newly purchased lands. They brought technology with them, and they prospered. Some Arab countries worried about Jewish return, so the race was on to see if Egyptians and Arabians could flood the land faster than world Jewry could make Aliyah or go up to Israel. What had been a primarily desolate land was now viewed by the Arabs as a political prize. Intermittent wars began to not only take away land purchased by the Jews, but also to drive them into the sea, another form of genocide. However, Jehovah has spoken, I will plant them upon their land, and they shall no more be plucked up out of their land which I have given them, saith Jehovah thy God. Amos 9, verse 15. From the river to the sea, Israel will always be. Earliest times and today. He who created earth can give the land to whomever he pleases. 4 millennia ago, God promised land from the river of Egypt, likely the Wadi El Arish, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, though not while the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet fulfilled. Genesis 15, verses 16 through 21. 4 centuries later, the El Amaran tablets between Palestine and Egypt suggest their iniquity was full. It is clear that Syria and Palestine were seething with intrigue within and were under attack from without. In the 14th century BC, the Hebrew or Hebrews invaded the land. God pronounced, "Mine angel shall go before thee and bring thee into the Amorite, and I will cut them off. Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works. I will set thy border from the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aqaba, even unto the Sea of the Philistines, the Mediterranean, and from the wilderness, Sinai, and the Negev, unto the river Euphrates. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods." Exodus 23:20-33. However, Israel was tricked into making a covenant with the Gibeonites. Nevertheless, over the centuries, they have kept that covenant in Joshua chapter 9. When Israel declared independence in 1948, Jordan told the Arabs who lived in the land of Israel to retreat into Jordan until they had driven all the Jews into the sea. The retreating Arabs would then get their land back and take all the Jews' land as well. Israel made it clear to the Arabs who remained in the land that they would keep their lands, but those Arabs who left would lose their lands. Israel delivered on its promise. Jordan could not. When in 1933 Hitler came to power in Germany, he pressured the Jews to leave. One Israeli told this writer that a policeman covertly forewarned his father because his wife had been politically active. They grabbed what they could and eventually ended up in Palestine. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem feared the immigration of Jews and persuaded Hitler to begin the ultimate solution. An observer wonders, who practices racial hatred? Who is safer, an Arab walking around Tel Aviv or a Jew walking around Ramallah, the Heights of Allah? Arab Muslims and Christians freely walk the streets of Israeli cities. Jews and Arabs work together in businesses and hospitals. Hadassah Hospital is well known for even taking care of Arab Muslims who hate Israel. Today, it seems Israel is still observing the covenant made with Gibeon. Be blessed or cursed. Jehovah said unto Abraham, "I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and be thou a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee, and him that disdaineth thee will I curse, and in thee shall all the families of the land be blessed." Genesis 12:1-3 from the RVIC. The blessing continued through Isaac and Jacob and will ultimately be to their descendants through Jesus. When people bless Jewry, good things happen to them. In 1917, Great Britain issued the Balfour Declaration favoring the establishment of a homeland for the Jews in Palestine. The following year, Great Britain was on the winning side of World War I. In the 1930s, Hitler's Germany cursed the Jews, and in 1945, Germany lost World War II. Like Gibeon or like Amalek? More recently, nations and organizations have been choosing whether to bless Israel, to curse Israel, or perhaps to keep Israel at a distance. The son of a Hamas co-founder has self-converted to Christianity. He says Hamas wants to annihilate an entire race, that is, the Jews, to build an Islamic state. The 2023 Hamas attack on Israel from the Gaza Strip was on October 7th, Vladimir Putin's birthday. The son of Hamas says there is no chance of peace with Hamas. Hamas must be finished. That's it. There is no alternative option. Today, nations are choosing whether to be kind to Israel or join an effort to destroy it. Those interested include Iran, Russia, Armenia, and the Caucasian Georgia, as well as African nations, Germanic and Slavic nations, and Turkish nations. Others, such as the Arabian countries, Western Europe, and the Americas, are also interested. In a more subtle form of aggression toward the restored nation of Israel, a two-state solution is offered as a means of making peace between the immigrant Arabs and the promised seed of Israel. If Israel's leadership falls for this political Trojan horse, they will be following in the footsteps of King Saul's disobedience. In our view, God will not let this happen. Let us be watching.